Welcome to the Herbal Womb Wisdom Podcast, where we explore the embodied practice of herbalism with the womb at the center for folks who are new to herbs or herbalists in the making. This is a place to become empowered to include herbs and natural therapies in your personal health and, most importantly, to reconnect to the deep wisdom and healing capacity of your own body and the earth. I'm your host, clinical herbalist and integrative health educator, Kyalea Honeybee. Let's dive in. Hi, beautiful friends. Welcome. Welcome back if you're returning, and welcome, welcome if you're new. Happy New Year. Happy 2024. Gosh, how strange is it that these years, they just continue flowing along? It's kind of amazing. It is nice to have markers, isn't it? We can actually reflect on the previous period of time, circle around the sun. It could be your birthday. It could be this from solstice to solstice. It could be a different period of time during the year that you consider to be more of a new year than right now. I mean, this is just numbers, but it does feel like there's some kind of power. Yesterday, I took some time with my partner just reflecting on what has transpired in this year. And so from the beginning, January 1st of 2023 until December 31st of 2023, what are the major milestones that I can remember that I feel grateful for, that I feel like were accomplishments, were achievements, were wins? And then what are some of the things that have been really impactful and profound and heart-wrenching and deep and mysterious and unknown? All of those things, but just really feeling like, wow, it really gives a potency to the year to do that. It doesn't have to be at the Gregorian New Year like right now, but it is. There's a collective energy right now of renewal and refreshing. And of course, as I mentioned last week, it really is more of a seeding time. We're not quite at the time of springing out and doing the actions, but we certainly are in that time of dream and that time of seed and what is possible, and really allowing ourselves the space, the receptive space in this calendar year, in the wheel of the year, to really tune into what it is that we would like to bring forth in 2024. It's a good opportunity to do so in this wintertime, this dark wintertime, as the sun is beginning very, very slightly to return in the sky. So today is another compilation episode. I've brought together three different snippets from one is an interview and the other two are solo episodes, really on the theme of body literacy. Understanding your body and what it's telling you. Your vaginal fluids is going to be the first topic that I share about for a little bit. What's normal, what's not normal, the fact that we often don't have any idea what is normal. So really getting to know your body and recognizing how powerful that can feel and that is. And then the second one is actually from an interview that I did with Gabrielle Jansen, all about really birth control, the business of birth control, the history of birth control, and particularly being on the birth control pill, how that affects your body and ways to support your body in that time. And then the third one is about supporting your body if you're transitioning off of hormonal birth control. So actually thinking through what are reasons that you might want to transition off of it, maybe or maybe not. And then if you do decide to transition off, kind of a little glimpse into how to begin to support your body from an herbal lens in that time. And so there, of course, the links to all of those full episodes, if you do find that you're just wanting to listen to the entire thing, will be in the resources on the show notes page. You can get those at herbalwomb.com/episode102. These are really just glimpses into the topics. And I feel like it's just, in my mind, body literacy 101, birth control 101. This is the kind of stuff that is the foundation of really understanding the choices that you have, like really getting a sense of not only what your body is telling you, like what is the wisdom that is being shared with you through your menstrual cycles, through the fluids, through your symptoms, and also understanding your options, your contraceptive options, and how they're impacting you. Really, the point of all of it is for you to have information that you need to make the decisions that are right for you to have your own empowered choice, for you to find your own path to contraception that feels good for you. And also to start to really listen to the symptoms that your body is telling you and recognize that you have so much wisdom inherent, literally your body is giving you the symptoms, the signals, the information that I think a lot of times we rely on lab tests. I was just thinking about LH strips even, which not that to say that they're bad or completely useless, but our bodies give us so much information if we really want to know when we're fertile, if we really want to know when we're ovulating, and just gain more confidence in your own body knowledge. Okay, before we dive in, let's do the disclaimer that nothing that I or we share today is medical advice. I'm an herbalist and a integrative health coach, and Gabrielle Jansen is trained as a naturopath in Australia. She's a really, really awesome human, a fertility educator. I'm actually going to be teaching a class with her in person in Hope, Maine this winter, which I'm very excited about. If you are local in the Wabanaki lands of Maine, please check out the resources section to see and learn more about that class. If you're interested, it is going to be an embodied birth control class in person. And regardless, nothing is medical advice. It is all for your own information, education, and personal empowerment, for you to feel into what is true and right for you in your body, in your life at this time too. Things can change time to time. And if you have any specific concerns or conditions, be sure to check in with someone that you feel like could really support you, whether that's an herbalist or an acupuncturist or a functional medicine practitioner or a health coach or a conventional medical practitioner. All of these are options for you. There are so many options. I think one of the things I'm trying to emphasize the most with this particular episode compilation that's happening today is that you have options and that there's no shame in your choice, no matter which path you decide to take. Okay, friends. Well, with no further ado, here are the episodes for you. First, let's start with what vaginal fluids are. What am I even talking about? I've already kind of mentioned this, but I'll just go over it more clearly. So overall, the term for anything that is flowing out of your vagina that's not blood is called discharge. I didn't want to actually name the podcast episode vaginal discharge, even though that's really what we're talking about, because I feel like that term is not, I don't know, like it has a weird connotation to it. It sounds like waste. It sounds like garbage. It sounds like something gross. I mean, I don't know what it feels like for you, but I feel like there's this weird connotation. And really, honestly, like, why are we talking about things that are coming out of our vagina in that way? You know, like if they're coming out of a place in our bodies that has so much beauty to it, we have access to incredible pleasure in this place. We have access to creativity and literal creation of other humans, you know, like an actual creation of babes, and it's where we birth our babes into the world. Really, a lot of what we're experiencing when we see vaginal fluids is information that our body is sharing with us, right? It's information around whether we are fertile in that moment, or if our cycles are regular, if we're ovulating, if we have maybe some kind of imbalance going on, you know, the smells or the color or the texture, whatever it is that's coming out, can tell us a lot. Like, this is like sacred fluid, you know, arousal fluid. My gosh, like, it's amazing what can come out of this place. And why are we talking about it like it's garbage, right? So I guess that's what I think about when I think of discharge and that word. So shifting it to fluids, hopefully, is allowing you to embrace a different perception of one of those things that we often don't talk about, whether that's with friends or family or even healthcare practitioners. Okay, so what kinds of fluids might be coming out of you? Number one, there are all of the fluids that come out around your fertile window, which is also called cervical mucus. That is a way that is described, and so you might already be familiar with that. We're going to talk more about it. Another way that fluids might be coming out of your body is actually as mucus from the walls of your vagina or your cervix or maybe other places, but mucus or just secretions coming out of the vaginal walls, which could be totally normal, or there could be an infection happening. And so we'll talk about ways that that can look. But normal discharge is actually really helpful, like this normal vaginal fluid just hanging out in your vagina is actually really helpful for lubricating the vagina in general, keeping the walls of the vagina supple, even some of the self-cleaning that the vagina does, keeping bacteria that you don't want in there out, keeping bacteria that you do want in there, because our vaginas do have their own unique microbiome. And actually, if you're interested in that and you want to learn more about it, then you can go and check out the episode. I will definitely link it in the show notes, but the episode on your vaginal microbiome, which is herbalwomb.com/episode 9. Herbalwomb.com/episode 9 is all about your vaginal microbiome and ways to encourage a healthy microbiome in there. Anyway, so you've got your vaginal microbiome, you've got the lubrication of your vagina, you've got the keeping your walls supple. I mean, there's like a lot of reasons that it's really nice to have some moisture there in your vagina, and some of that is coming through the vaginal walls, and some of that might be coming from the cervix as well. Then you've also got arousal fluids, and those arousal fluids are coming from various glands and also secretion from vaginal walls, and that happens with arousal. I'm sure you're familiar with it, but it's also something that I feel like a lot of us don't actually experience enough of because we don't take the time to really encourage our arousal. It can take, for those of us with vaginas and with wombs, it can actually take us like 30 to 45 minutes to really start to encourage those vaginal juices and those arousal fluids to get really ripe and ready. I mean, that's a long time. That's a long time. So that's something for a different episode, but I feel like it's important to note and to mention. And then, of course, there's going to be mucus that can be, that would be created from something, for instance, being inside your vagina that's not supposed to be there, or something like a bacterial infection or a fungal infection or something that is causing the immune function to be creating more mucus to kind of deal with it, right? So those are the ways that we might be seeing vaginal fluids happening. And of course, we also have bleeding. That's another thing. And we will talk a tiny bit about that, especially in the postpartum period. Okay, so when you're considering what is going on in your vagina, what fluids are flowing, what is coming out of you, there are some questions that would be helpful for you to ask yourself based on the life phase that you're in at this time, and then kind of going back and figuring out, oh, like what is in quotes normal during that life phase. So number one, are you pregnant? Are you pregnant? Number two, are you postpartum? Number three, are you ovulating or just in your cycling years? You might have irregular cycles, but are you in your cycling years? Number four, are you postmenopausal, meaning that you have already experienced menopause? Menopause is when you've had 12 full months with no cycles. And are you aroused? Number five, are you aroused? Are you experiencing arousal, which can also happen through something like breast or chest feeding? Actually, with nipple stimulation of any kind, you can actually experience some arousal. So that could be happening too, or it could even be through your mind or through your dreams. So like that is something to consider. Okay, so now we're going to actually talk about each of those different times in your life and ways to understand what is maybe more normal and what might be something to think more about. Okay, so first let's talk about our cycling years. During our cycling years, there's going to be a lot of different fluids coming out at different times of our cycles and at different times of the month. But of course, like I said, all of us are different. You've got to get to know your own normal, and then you gauge your own fluids on that. Which is why I highly recommend, and if you've been with me on this podcast for very long, you probably are very, very aware that I highly recommend tracking your own cycle. And if you're not doing that yet, I'm not talking just using an app that's predictive. I'm talking about actually tracking day after day. Ideally, you're tracking your basal body temperature and you're tracking your cervical mucus or your fluids coming out every single day of your cycle. And maybe you're also checking out the position of your cervix. And I like to do it on paper. I have actually a paper chart that you can print out if you want to, but there's also apps like Kindara is one, and there might be some other ones that allow you to actually track your symptoms and track your ovulation, track your fertile window, track your fluids that are meant for fertility awareness. So you definitely, if you're using an app, want to look for that. But regardless, if you're interested in just learning how to do this, whether you decide to put it on paper or do an app, and you haven't done it before or you want a refresher, I have a free guide, herbalwomb.com/track-your-cycle, herbalwomb.com/track-your-cycles. It tells you just the basics to get you started, and it has some information on what's kind of considered more normal and what's not, and even some more resources to if you want to go deeper or more or further, some books that I recommend or other resources that you can check out. Okay, herbalwomb.com/track-your-cycle. Check it out if you're not tracking your cycle yet. If you are already tracking your cycle, then you're probably at least somewhat aware, if not fully aware, of what your normal is. And maybe if you have like irregular cycles, then you're still kind of like working through it and learning more. But you've got a sense of what I mean by the cycle. The fluids are always changing. Your cervical mucus, your fluids coming out of your vagina are always changing. All right. So what is normal though? So in quotes, normal is that we have menstruation, right? We have our menstrual flow that happens. And then which is followed by what are called in quotes, dry days. Dry days are different for different people. Some people actually have some vaginal fluids coming out during dry days. So your dry days, that's what you need to gauge it on. Your dry days, what does that look like for you? For some people, it does feel completely dry. They don't even notice anything on their toilet paper or even if they, you know, are checking with their fingers. Next, you're going to experience the fertile window, which usually starts with more like a rubber cementy kind of sticky fluid, and then it turns towards creamy, and then it turns towards like a real egg white, can be very copious amount of fluid coming out that's stretchy. It's really amazing. It's stretchy. It's perfect really for fertilization. That is like the time that, for instance, sperm would be able to navigate their way into the cervix and through the cervix. It's really incredible. It's also like can often increase our sexual arousal and sexual desire and just desire for pleasure, because that moisture, just like that fluid in there, just actually really, really, really feels good. And so that's something to take advantage of. And of course, if you're trying to avoid pregnancy, then you would want to make sure that you are using some form of protection to avoid pregnancy. But otherwise, it is just like an incredible time to explore your sexuality, your sensuality. Okay, after the egg whites, after your fertile window, that's usually, it depends on the person, it could be 3 to 7 days of fertile window time. You're going to ovulate, and then you might have some spotting. Sometimes some people have a little bit of spotting around ovulation itself. And then beyond that, for that entire phase, the luteal phase, between that and when you menstruate again, there's often drier days, right? And so dry for you, again, is different for everybody. So figure out what your dry is. And then you might have some premenstrual discharge. You might have a little bit of like brownish mucusy discharge. You might have a little bit of light pink, especially, for instance, if your progesterone is a little bit lower or if your womb position is not ideal. There are like different things that can happen. I'm not going to talk about all the different reasons that things might happen, but just know that that is something that isn't considered to be abnormal, but it does mean that there's something that is not necessarily optimal in your body, and that's something that you could potentially work on. And of course, if you're coming off of hormonal birth control, which I know some people are, it can take months and even up to a year or more for your cycle to normalize, to come back into its cycling rhythm. So you may experience some on again, off again, fertile mucus. You might notice that it kind of like seems like it's trying to start and then it stops and then it comes up again. And that can also happen in the perimenopausal years, that time, that transitional time. So you might start to notice that. And so it's important. That's why it's really important as well to be taking your temperature along with your fertile fluids, because you really want to make sure, especially if you're, you know, tracking your cycle for contraception, you want to make sure like, okay, I ovulated. And so now I can feel safe, you know, having intercourse. If you're having heterosexual intercourse, then you can feel safe having intercourse without any kind of protection. Okay, so just to review, in our cycling years, you're going to have a change of fluids throughout the month. And I highly recommend tracking your cycle because there are a lot of different fluids that come out and they can be completely normal. So just because you're having some kind of creamy fluid or creamy discharge coming out does not mean you necessarily have a yeast infection or some kind of infection happening. It might be your fertile fluid. And for some people, you might not actually get to the complete egg white. You might just have some kind of a little bit of clear fluid coming out that's a bit stretchy. It might not be able to stretch quite as far as like an egg white would, for instance. So everybody's a little different. You'll get to know your own normal. And then, of course, in your cycling years, you're also going to have things like arousal fluid, which is what we're going to go into now. So arousal fluid. What is arousal fluid? What does it look like? What does it feel like? How do you know that that's what's going on? Okay, it's going to be different for everyone. You're going to have your own arousal fluid. You know when you're aroused, right? And I'm assuming that at some point you've experienced some kind of sensual or sexual pleasure that has really allowed your tissues to plump up and get kind of ripe and ready and juicy. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about arousal fluid. It's something that happens. It doesn't just happen when you just like start having sex, you have a desire, and then you have sex. No, that doesn't, it doesn't really happen like that. Of course, it's wonderful to use lube if you need to. I mean, I think it's a wonderful thing to add into your life. But when we're really talking about arousal fluid, it can be copious. It's usually kind of slippery. Sometimes it's a little bit watery. It kind of depends where it's coming from. So there are different places that the arousal fluid can come from. Some of it can come, it can be secretions out of the vaginal walls. Some of it is going to be secreted from different glands. And then there is some that actually might even come out of the urethra. And so there's a variety of different places. And there's even sweat glands actually in the vulva area. And so there's ways that, the sweat glands can actually create a little bit of lubrication for sexual activity. So it's really an interesting combination of ways that you might have fluid happening down there. And I think it's important to consider it. It's also important to recognize that it takes, like I said before, it takes some time. I mean, everybody is different. You might be somebody who's just able to be aroused immediately. It's very interesting, though. Sometimes we can get aroused just by our thoughts, right? So absolutely, of course, our minds are creating everything. What's happening with arousal is that often there's kind of a stimulation of some kind, and that goes to our brain, and it basically signals our pelvic organs, right? It signals our clitoris. And
in perspective, and to be totally fair, I did a 4-year undergraduate naturopathy training program, which was like so fabulous, clinical, in depth, and detailed. We had the Billings method people come and talk to us about a little bit about fertility awareness in like our fourth year, and it didn't land with me the way that it landed with me some years later. And I think about that experience of like, oh, they sort of came and they sort of explained a little bit about ovulation, but it wasn't like as hard hitting as it was 5 or 6 years later when I actually went, and or maybe it was, well, however many years later it was, and trained in the fertility awareness method. And I think that disconnect is really interesting. And I wonder the same, like when you're at school, there is so much to learn, like so much to learn. And you learn what's going to be on the exam in a lot of cases, which isn't necessarily the best way to learn, but it is what, it's how education, like big system education works. So if how ovulation works in our body is, and like the benefits and the need isn't on the paper, then how are our doctors going to learn that? How are our naturopaths, anyone going to learn that?
Yeah. Oh, and what are they going to prioritize? Yeah. Go ahead.
Exactly. No, I'm just thinking, and that speaks to the whole gender bias in the medical system and the education system. Like when studies often haven't, I think it's slowly start, like the tide is slowly starting to turn, but like often studies were based on the single white, young white male body, cis male body, and they weren't even considering women. They certainly weren't considering trans folks. And they definitely weren't thinking about, if they did consider women, like what stage of their reproductive life they're in and what phase of their menstrual cycle, because as we know, our hormones fluctuate dramatically every single cycle. Your hormones are so different from the first half to the second half, and in between they're going up and down. So it's amazing to think about, what if science incorporated all of that information? Wow.
Yeah. Like cycle aware science. That would be an incredible shift. And maybe there is, maybe you're, like you're saying, I think there are, there's more and more awareness of this. So I'm sure that people who are in the academic world are starting to think through it, but it is, it makes it more complicated. And I know that's why cycling folks have not been included for the most part in studies is partly because it can complicate things, but it's like, well, then we don't actually know how things interact.
Exactly.
With, like, many, many humans on this planet.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's wild. It's really interesting. It's really interesting to talk about this in the context of the discussion of the pill, because we're just kind of like doing these broad brushstrokes of like, here's the dynamic space that we find ourselves in trying to navigate contraception in 2022. Yes. You know, there's so much that has gone into this. And the pill itself, looking at the production of the pill is a really interesting story. I mean, it started, first pills were being manufactured in the 50s. There is definitely some pretty concerning story about the way the pill first got created, if you like, the way that it got pushed through the FDA. The trials were actually done, the very first trials were actually done on Puerto Rican women.
Wow.
And yeah, and I don't know, I want to say that with a caveat, like I know the loose threads of the story, but I don't know the full depth of what was going on at that time. Mm-hmm. But pushing those trials through in a country that wasn't the USA and then pushing it through the FDA, and also the testing of those first early pills on like the Black and brown women of Puerto Rico, who maybe didn't always have, I don't know how much of the studies were done in the languages that they spoke. So there's a lot of questions about why did they have to take this drug offshore and then why did they push it through the FDA? So there's a lot of questions. And I, like I said, I've read a little bit of like pill journalism, if you like. There's a book called Sweetening the Pill by Holly Griggs-Ball, who's a journalist from the UK, wrote a lot about how we kind of like got into the whole pill thing. There's also a documentary out now at the moment. Oh gosh, something about being on the pill. I can't think of what it's called, but it's not the
business of birth control, right? That's not right.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Business of birth control. Yeah. So there's like some resources coming out where people are trying to start asking these critical questions. So it's just very interesting. It's also worth noting that for sure, the first very early pills that came out were extremely high in estradiol, synthetic estrogen, sorry. Mm-hmm. And that was definitely causing severe blood clotting. And there was also, on a very serious note, there has been deaths linked to pill usage because of the blood clotting issue. And the forms and the amounts of the synthetic estrogens are a lot less these days in the pills mm-hmm. that are now more widely available. But I think those risk factors are still there to a certain level.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. So let's actually, since we're talking about like this history of the pill, let's actually talk about the pill shame that can happen these days, and also how different that is from the empowerment, that kind of like time when the pill came out and people were like proud to be using birth control. They were like, yes, this is a, like in quotes, women's right, you know, to have the right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So Yeah. What an interesting landscape. So the pill starts to get like, it comes to the FDA, the 50s, 60s, right? Starts to get more widespread in the 70s. You have the like, you know, at that time, especially in like white culture, this kind of like free women's liberation movement, mm-hmm. Which is very empowering. People are starting to get more access to birth control pills. It's like, oh my God, of course. Like, this is incredible. What an incredible thing to have. You know, sometimes they could get it discreetly. They, you know, it was massive. It for real, in a big way, changed culture.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this huge liberation element attached to the pill. So at a time, you know, at one point or other in history, it might not have been very cool to have this conversation, you know, like, oh, here are like some of the other elements going on with the pill.
Mm-hmm.
But there's this like liberation kind of element, like the pill comes along, we have hormonal birth control. Hooray, we can have sex whenever. Any of the side effects aren't really maybe being discussed as openly. Or maybe they're not really associating like the mood disorder stuff, the real experiences that like women and folks using the pill are actually having. Mm-hmm. They're maybe not kind of looking at like the side effect picture and just saying like, this is kind of an amazing thing. And then come kind of almost full circle 2022, something that I do notice a lot now in the natural health circles is, I see it online, because don't we all see everything online these days?
And mm-hmm.
see it on social media, like a bit of pill shame, where like the pill is now like, it was the liberator, and now it's like, I can't believe you're on the pill, like it's so bad for your health,
mm-hmm.
this, that, and the other thing. And I see this kind of like, ooh, it's sort of like a bit of an insidious, kind of a nasty thread where people are kind of shaming other people for choosing the pill, or if you've been on it, like I did once upon a time, but like, I can't believe you would do that. And then the self-shame, like, I can't believe I would take it for so long and not know the consequences. What was I doing to my body? You know,
right.
There's all this shame associated that I'm starting to see. And I have a bit of a bone to pick with that. I just feel like no more shame in reproductive health space. Like, haven't we had enough shame for our bodies?
Totally.
You know, for generations? Like, no, thank you. So I really, and I was kind of saying before, like, I really want to have this conversation from a place of like, ooh, let's talk about all the dynamic elements about pill from an educational place and try and like support and uplift and share what we know. It's always unraveling with folks so they can make the best decision for their bodies at that time. Because for some people, like, we live in rural Maine, right? Like, it might literally be the best option you have access to in a moment. Like, if you're, you know, in any part of this country or anywhere else, and it's like, maybe you don't necessarily want to have the pill, but you feel like in this moment, at this point in my life, this is the thing that's going to allow me to have contraception. And then when I'm feeling maybe a bit more resourced, well-resourced, or I have the support network that I need, I'm in a place in my life where I'm able to like learn fertility awareness or consider non-hormonal birth control options.
Yes.
That might be a better time for me to transition off. So I just want to be clear. And in my clinic, like, if I've definitely worked with folks that are like kind of on it and starting to think about shifting off their hormonal birth control. And I'm in full support of whatever that process looks like for the individual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've also encountered folks who actually have, they know the risks and they know, they actually already know about, I know some folks who they already know about fertility awareness, and it's just, for them, it doesn't feel like the right thing in their life. And so they've actually chosen hormonal birth control. That might be an IUD. It might not be the birth control pill, or it might be the birth control pill. And it might be a hormonal one. It's like that there's choices that people make. And I think it's really amazing. And I like that we're having this conversation, because I think it's really empowering to get the full picture, you know, and then to choose what is correct for you, what is correct for each person, you know, because we can't know that. I can't know what's true and right for one another person. There might be a reason that it's really, maybe it's easier. Maybe they have PCOS and maybe they just like are having a hard time with dietary changes and they can't afford supplements. And they're just like, the pill is, it's like an easier option right now.
You know? Absolutely. I think about that a lot in terms of like clinical, your comment on PCOS made me think about, so like with folks that are going through PCOS or endometriosis, the pill won't fix those conditions. It can't, because we know it just interrupts that phone call, gives you really bad self-service for a while.
Yeah.
So it can't actually fix those conditions, but it totally can act as a circuit breaker for some people. Yes. Like if you've been struggling with like intensely heavy periods and intensely heavy cramping, and you're like trying to take the supplements that you can afford and get as much support as you can and try and eat organic and you're trying to do these things and it's just like you're really struggling, the pill might come in as an option for you to take a few months off, keep doing all that root cause stuff, keep trying to support yourself in the ways that you have access to, but, and the pill might be this helpful tool. We could look at it as a tool that you go into saying like, I know that it shuts down ovulation. I know it's not addressing my root causes, but right now it's giving me a little bit of peace. And that is really, really integral to my well-being.
Absolutely. And I think that's always important to look at. It's so, it's interesting too, because that's something that has been, that's come up for me in my life, not the pill specifically, but this idea of like, for many, many years, I was kind of like anti-pharmaceuticals and anti-conventional medicine. I really did have a radical bend to me, like a very significant one for about 10 years at least. And during that time, it was like, I would not use Advil or ibuprofen or Tylenol. I was like, no pain meds. Never will I use that, you know? And so, yeah, I'm using herbs. And sometimes that was supportive. Or sometimes I'd just be like, I just need to feel this. I just need to go through this challenging time and feel the pain that I'm experiencing. And that's like part of my journey as a human. And so I need to do this. But you know what? That's activating a stress response in my body. And like, there's times when actually it's like a very temporary time, it can be helpful to have a pharmaceutical for a minute, you know?
Yes. Yeah. 100%. So that's the point, right? Isn't that the whole point? Is like they're there as tools for us to use when and if we need them. And we can use any of those tools with, I think it comes down to consent, with full consent.
Absolutely.
Education and awareness that you know what you're doing. Like,
yes.
Okay, I'm choosing this and this is why. And it's going to be helpful. Because, like you said, if going through this really intense and painful process is activating your stress response, guess what? That's making everything worse in the long run.
It's so true. And if you don't know why that's true, then you can go back to the stress podcast from a couple of weeks ago.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. Yes. It's a really good one. People should go listen to it.
Totally. I think this is just a really interesting conversation to be having. I didn't actually expect us to kind of get into some of
me neither. Topics. Yeah, me neither.
But I feel like it's so nice to kind of be like, yeah, we don't have to feel shame. It's okay to use a pharmaceutical here and there. It's okay if this is a choice. If you're coming from an informed consent place, that is what is most important. That's what it sounds like both of us are very much on board with this concept. So yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Well, since we're diving into this and since we're talking about the possibility that somebody might actually choose the pill or currently be on the pill, then if somebody is on the pill or maybe some other kind of hormonal birth control, like what can they do to support their bodies? Are there herbs, foods, nutrients, anything you want to share?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's really great. Let's talk directly to the folks that are on the pill maybe right now and thinking, there's so much that you can do while you're on the pill. There's a few key things to think about. One, I guess like the simple thing, well, it's not always simple, but as much as possible, eat like a wholesome diet. And what I mean by that is really phytonutrient rich foods. And people are like, what the hell is that? So like really wholesome, go to your farmer's markets, get your really wholesome organic veg, you know, getting organic food as much as possible. The reason that's important is because pesticides from sprayed food can act as endocrine disruptors. They can interrupt and affect our hormonal signaling. So we want to try and like eat organic as much as possible. And that obviously that's not always possible for all of us all the time, again, because of access and pricing. But there's some great resources. One is called the Environmental Working Group, the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15. Yeah, that's a really like nice little user-friendly guide to figuring out like, okay, I can't always afford organic, but what can I do to like, what are the best foods I should eat that are organic and which ones are conventionally grown that actually don't have much pesticide residue? So that's a really cool resource. So eat really well if you can, hydration. One of the big things I'll say is that the pill, there's actually research for this, does, drain the body of some nutrients. So it does deplete us in some certain nutrients. So a really simple thing, if you're on the pill, and especially if you've been on it for a while, would be to take a good quality multivitamin. And I would look for a good quality multi with some of the nutrients, like your B vitamins. So B2, B6, B12, vitamin C and vitamin E, they're really nice antioxidants. Magnesium, selenium, zinc, and folate. These are all nutrients that are depleted on the pill and that are also important for our reproductive health.
Actually, the idea of hormonal birth control, you know, having these artificial hormones essentially in our bodies that then we choose to stop or discontinue at a certain point, that kind of transition is not something that our bodies are necessarily going to have a hard time with. I mean, it depends on the person, but up to 80% of people who come off of hormonal birth control, at least the birth control pill, so I'm going to assume that that's similar for other hormonal birth control methods, will regain their natural menstrual cycle, their natural menstruation. They'll actually menstruate. They'll have their first period, essentially, within 3 months of stopping hormonal birth control. They will ovulate, they will menstruate, and their cycles will start again. Will they be completely regular cycles? Not necessarily. Between the first 3 and 6 months, there may be a little bit of irregularity. There might be a bunch of symptoms that come up, but for some people, it's super nonchalant. And it's just like, oh, I came off of birth control and now my cycles are regular. So that is true for some people. And then there are other people where you might experience symptoms. You might experience symptoms of that hormonal shift and your body might just be sensitive. Your body might need support with the adaptation, the transition process. And I'm going to talk today about how to support yourself in the immediate time, like initially what you can do in terms of just like really supporting the foundations of health and making sure that your systems are working well to be able to adapt. And then we can also talk about a few of the common symptoms that can come up and how you can work with those from an herbal perspective. And then eventually, after like 6 months, 6 to 12 months, really, you can give yourself 6 months very comfortably to just see how the cycles go. Just nourish yourself, support your elimination systems, encourage more optimal systems and functioning in your body, nutrition and nourishment. And then after 6 months, if you're not having a regular cycle come up, then you can start looking at more targeted herbs to support the regularity. But generally, most people are not going to need the targeted herb to regulate their hormones because most people, including yourself potentially, are just going, your body is just going to adapt. Your body knows how to adapt and adjust. Your body knows how to cycle, probably better than almost anything else in the world. That is like one of our primary functions as humans, as animals, right? Is to essentially reproduce, right? So our bodies like really prioritize that. And so as long as the other systems of your body are working well, it's very possible that within 6 months, your cycle will come back and will start to regulate. However, if it doesn't, then yes, there are options for more targeted herbal protocols. And I'm going to talk just generally from a general perspective around like which categories of herbs you might want to add in there and just a few different herbal examples, but I'm not going to talk specific because it is very much about formulating for that specific person. At that point, there's probably other symptoms that are coming up. And so there's different formulas that would be right depending on what somebody has going on. Anyway, I just want to acknowledge that there are a huge number of people that at some point in your life, you may have been on hormonal birth control for one reason or another. I mean, even in our teen years, it is very, very, very common for gynecologists or even PCPs, primary care providers, to put someone on hormonal birth control because of, for instance, acne or irregular cycles, rather than exploring what is causing those or are there ways to actually work with more of the root cause so that we don't have to do that immediately, initially. I actually just got a message recently from someone whose daughter has some menstrual challenges and she's a teenager. I think she's 16 years old. And the main suggestion is putting her on birth control and like, are there any other options? And I think that is not uncommon. And so you may be one of those people who in your teen years, you may have been put on birth control, on hormonal birth control, whether that's the pill or some other hormonal birth control, and just not come off of it because it does potentially mask symptoms. Hormonal birth control can mask symptoms, whether that is symptoms from things like PCOS or endometriosis, even possibly PMDD, although sometimes that can make it much worse. So it really depends on the person and their sensitivity. And for all of these, can make it worse or can make it better, there's symptom relief potential. And for some people, that's life-saving. For some people, the concept of having an ability to live their lives and not be, you know, let's say with endometriosis, their half of their month be in just grueling pain on the floor, unable to get out of bed because of the pain in their pelvis, like, I guess I should say it can be life-giving. Because it can really support us to be in the world versus just be focused on the imbalances in our pelvis or in our hormones. So yes, there are ways that it can be really life-giving, life-saving even, and there's a lot of reasons that people might decide that they're ready to come off of it. So one of those reasons could be wanting to conceive a child, right? So even if you have those different conditions, wanting to come off of the hormonal birth control because you're ready to have a family, you want to have a child. I would say in that case, especially if you have any underlying conditions or if you had irregular cycles before you started your birth control, actually probably a good idea to give yourself at least a year. At least a year before you're like thinking, okay, I'm going to conceive now, to get your cycle regulated again and also support that just kind of preconception environment, more of an optimal preconception environment in your body. Really good idea to give yourself that time. Even if you're just trying to come off of birth control, even if you didn't have those underlying conditions, but you're thinking of conceiving, I think that's a great idea to have like a full year, really plan out that that's going to be your kind of cultivating the preconception environment so that you know that you're going to have the time that you need to really get into that fertile state. So that's one reason. Another reason might be that people really just want to experience their natural cycles and the power and the potency and the pleasure and the deep connection and wisdom and relationship to their womb space and the cycles that are held there. And of course, you have access to that even if you're on hormonal birth control. You can still access that from an intuitive place. But on hormonal birth control, you aren't experiencing the ovulation. You aren't experiencing that full cycling hormonal milieu that we experience, that kind of wave of hormones that are a part of the natural menstrual cycle. It's not to say that you need to. There are plenty of people who stay on hormonal birth control for most of their cycling years and just come off to have a child. And that's totally fine if that is your what feels right and true for you. But there are some folks, you might be one of them, who actually want to experience your innate deep connection with yourself and with your natural hormones in your body and really feel that. And maybe if you're listening to this podcast, you're one of those people because I certainly share a lot about that. Or maybe you are someone who has side effects. You experience side effects of hormonal birth control and you're just done with it. You're ready to no longer experience those. And so you're just ready to try something else. You want to try other contraception or other options for natural remedies for some of the symptoms that you may have had before the birth control. Or yeah, you want to explore other contraception options. There are so many things that you can explore. And of course, my favorite, as you probably know, is tracking your own cycle through fertility awareness, which, by the way, if you are coming off hormonal birth control, regardless of which of these reasons you might be coming off for, I highly recommend starting to track your cycle immediately. Really just starting to get to know your body, get to know your own body symptoms and signals, and be able to track, see what your cervical fluid is like. Watch it as it changes over the course of the weeks and months after you stop the hormonal birth control. Actually watch your cervical fluid. You could even check out your cervical position and just get a connection with that part of your body. And then also checking your basal body temperature. Continuing to check your temperature day after day so that you can actually see when you ovulate. You can watch the magic of your body starting to ovulate again, really witness that happening. If you're tracking your cycle from the beginning, you can see that. And you can also see if there's any symptoms, if you have other things coming up, if they're relating to your cycle. All of that is super helpful information for yourself, for your own insights, but also if you're going to work with someone, some kind of practitioner, especially if you had a underlying condition before you started birth control. But in general, if you're trying to conceive, if you just want to get to know your body more, if you want to work on certain symptoms, all of that, it is helpful to be tracking your cycle. So that's really the first step, right? Is to start tracking your cycle. Your body is going to be in this adjustment period. If you stop hormonal birth control, which for most people is not a life-saving medicine for you. If it is, please work with your practitioner. Please work with your provider. Talk to your doctor. If you are somebody who has like immense pain, if you have immense mood disorders that are, you know, potentially supported by your hormonal birth control, please do not choose to do this on your own. Please do this with a practitioner. It is really important to have the support that you need in this process. But if you are coming off, then your body, your brain, actually, because of course, I guess I haven't really talked about this a ton on the podcast recently, but I will certainly link to some episodes that do talk about this, how stress messes with your hormones. I will link to that episode. I will link to the episode on ovulation. Are you ovulating and why it matters? And I will see if there are some other episodes to link to as well around how your hypothalamus, like actually your brain, right? So we have our hypothalamus, which is kind of a control center in our brain. And then we have our pituitary gland. And the pituitary gland and the hypothalamus are working together inside the brain, essentially to create the sex hormones that help us to ovulate, to know it's time to ovulate, and then to know that, okay, it's time to menstruate. All of these things are happening because of this feedback system that's happening in our bodies. And it all relates. It relates to stress levels. It relates to blood sugar levels. It relates to other hormones in our body. It can relate to inflammation. It can relate to a few feeling of safety or security. Of course, that might relate to our adrenal glands. So all of these things are impactful on our cycle, which is why our cycle is a vital sign. Your cycle is a vital sign. It shows the health of your systems and your overall body. So this is one of the reasons that it's so beautiful to have a menstrual cycle that is our natural cycle, because it actually gives us information about the health of other systems in our body. And we don't get that feedback if we are on hormonal birth control, because the hormonal birth control is basically feeding us those hormones. However, okay, so in this time of transitioning off of the hormonal birth control, your brain, your hypothalamus, and your pituitary, and really your ovaries are all going to need to start working again. They haven't had to work very hard because they've been given the hormones. So now they have to start working again. And so it's just an adjustment period. So what can you do? At first, there's kind of different phases. I think of initially, and just kind of for anyone and everyone who is transitioning off of birth control, hormonal birth control of any kind, it will be helpful to do the following categories: nourishment, and then adaptogens and nervines, and then liver support, and then elimination support. So those are four different categories that I find to be essential in creating that foundation. It's supporting that foundation, right? You've got the nutrition foundation. You might have a little bit of lifestyle foundation, meaning that you're moving, that you're getting fresh air, that you're getting nature connection, that you're avoiding environmental estrogens and environmental hormones by avoiding things like plastic, or keeping yourself away from like pesticides or extra fragrances. There's all these things that you do want to just overall lifestyle want to build that foundation with. But then when we add the herbs in, yes, I think these four categories are the ones to really focus on. I mean, and I think all that most people will actually even need would be these categories of herbs. There may be people that eventually you have other symptoms, you want to work on the symptoms, and I will share a little bit about that. Or eventually after 6 months, you realize, oh, my cycles actually aren't here yet, or oh, they're super irregular. That's when you can be a little bit more targeted. But for most people, just these four basic categories are going to be helpful. So let's start with nourishing herbs. So with nourishing herbs, I'm thinking herbs like nettles, oat straw, red raspberry leaf, possibly linden flower and leaf, possibly hawthorn flower and leaf, possibly red clover, possibly alfalfa. I would probably actually stay away from the red clover and alfalfa for a few months. And that could be something that's added in the future if needed, if desired. But really stick to things like nettles, oat straw, red raspberry leaf, maybe linden if you are feeling more like anxiety or you just want a little bit of support and calming down. Hawthorn leaf and flower could be added if you feel like there's any, yeah, anxiety or a little, you want a little bit of upliftment, or just generally nourishment of the cardiovascular system for some reason. Hawthorn leaf and flower are great there too. But nettles, oat straw, and red raspberry leaf is a beautiful combination. It's something that you can be doing regularly. And for a nourishing herbal infusion, that is going to be like a real nourishing infusion. That is taking a handful of those plants. These are like food plants, really. So nettles, oat straw, red raspberry leaf, mixing them together, taking a handful of those, placing those in a quart-sized jar, and then pouring just boiled water over them, covering that, and steeping that for at least 4 hours, up to 8 hours, or overnight, and then straining that, and then drinking that throughout the day. And like having that every single day is a wonderful way to just nourish your tissues, to support the deep repletion of minerals and vitamins and nutrients in your body. It is a beautiful plant-based way to support that overall nourishment of your body. All right, friends, you've made it to the end of these episode snippets. I hope that you enjoyed them and you received some either new information or some reminders that were helpful for you. And if you do want to listen, like I mentioned, to the rest of the episodes, each of them, these are just glimpses into the episodes. Each of them is probably around an hour long. So you can go find those at herbalwomb.com/episode 102, herbalwomb.com/episode 102. I will have resources there and you links to each of those episodes individually for you so you can go deeper, especially if you are transitioning off hormonal birth control. For instance, I only got into the very beginning of how to support yourself in that episode, and each of them, there's just so much more. So enjoy those. I'm so grateful that you've spent this time with me, that you've taken this precious time out of your life and shared this space with me. I like to imagine that we are having tea together, or we're sitting in a cozy space, especially because it is very much like I'm looking outside the window right now and it is snowing and it's a little bit gray outside. And so I like to imagine that we're by the fire and we're just cozy and we're warm and we're looking out at the snowflakes and we're chatting. We're having this embodied wisdom, connection to our womb space, connection to the earth, connection to the wisdom that is held inside us type of chat. And I just feel grateful that we get to do it together. So that is all for today. I hope that you're finding some spaciousness. I hope that you are really taking some time out of time in this darkness, in this midwinter seeding time, and allowing yourself to not be overstimulated, allowing yourself to sit back, stay away from tech for a little bit, get some time just being with yourself, maybe some time reading, maybe some time reflecting or journaling, just allowing maybe creative space, just allowing yourself to have the time out of time. It can be very, I think right now, as the year is coming on, it can be very overstimulating because there's a whole lot of people who are trying to take advantage of that newness, that energy of everyone is refreshing and renewing. And so what are your resolutions and what are your visions for the coming year? And yeah, that's lovely if that feels like you have that energy. But also remember, like, the winter is the time to really deeply replenish your stores. It's the time to be quiet. It's the time to reflect. It's the time to dream. It's the time to nourish at a deep level. So I hope that you are allowing yourself, giving yourself some of that time, not just overbooking yourself immediately. Okay, beautiful friend, happy, happy new year. May this be a truly beautiful one for you and for all of us. Until next week, live well, connect deeply.